Yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Lavender Fix podcast. I'm your host, Sabrine Hazik, and today's show is going to be therapy for me personally because I've recently observed a shift in the way I talk about my body, and quite frankly, I've dealt with disordered eating in some shape or form all my life. Thanks to the pandemic, things have only gotten worse. I'm sure so many of you also deal with negative self-talk and body imaging issues, and today we're going to address that because my next guest is Victoria Myers from Greenville, South Carolina. She's also the owner of Nourishing My Nutrition, and she's all about spreading body positivity through intuitive eating, and her practice is primarily focused on empowering women to ditch the diets, heal their digestion, regulate their hormones, and learn to practice wellness without obsession. Years ago, Victoria would spend every waking moment of her life obsessing over her body size, her meal plans, working out to burn off the calories, and things she could not eat. Like a lot of us, Victoria found herself in a downward spiral of yo-yo dieting, restrict and binge eating, and orthorexia. As a result of putting her body through years of strain, she developed hormonal imbalances and digestive issues. Today, she eats intuitively, has found happiness in her own skin, has healed her health issues, and is here to help us do the same. Hi, Victoria. Welcome to the Lavender Fix podcast. How are you?
I'm doing so well. Thank you so much for having me on the Lavender Fix podcast. I'm super excited to be here.
Yay! I have like a bazillion questions for you. So
I'm so excited and so ready for all your questions.
Thank you. All right, so let's just jump into it. So Victoria, first of all, what a superfly website. I'm obsessed with the design and how calming of a browsing experience that was for me. And just even while I was in that process, I was like, oh my God, I have to interview her. So tell us a little bit more about you and your company, Nourishing Minds Nutrition.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for those super kind words. I am also obsessed with design. And I think it's just so important that like what we put out to the world has aesthetic like appeal to it, right? Because it like draws people in, and then your words kind of keep them around. So thank you for noticing. I also feel similarly about that kind of stuff. So I am Victoria, Sabrina. So, you know, just beautifully said. Thank you for the beautiful introduction. I'm a registered dietitian. I'm also the owner of a virtual practice and online nutrition business, Nourishing Minds Nutrition. So our business is kind of a few different things. We have a ton of free content. We put out a lot of Instagram posts. We have a podcast called the Nourishing Women Podcast, and also a blog called Victoria Myers. But the bulk of what we are and what we do is a virtual private practice. So I specialize in helping people with disordered eating and orthorexia, which is the unhealthy obsession with eating healthy. And those things tend to come along with hormonal complications and digestive issues. So we also do quite a bit of that type of work in our practice too. And we also, just this year in 2020, introduced in online courses just to make it a little bit more accessible and affordable to people to work with us in that way too. So that's kind of the broad, but very, very quick introduction into like the work that we do.
You are very succinct. If someone asked me what I did, I would not be able to sum that up so quickly and in such a beautiful, crisp way. So kudos to you for
Thank
that.
Thank you. I used to take so long to answer that question because owning an online business is definitely different. And I was like, how do I describe this? But I always say a virtual practice and an online nutrition business.
I hear you. I hear you, my friend. So Victoria, how did this all start? How was this initiative born?
You know, it all started from a super personal place. I am so passionate about the work that I do to help women reclaim their lives from dieting because I was that person. A decade ago, I absolutely struggled for about 10 solid years with yo-yo dieting, going from one clean eating plan to the next. And I just always was on this pursuit to either lose weight or feel like a perfect version of health. It was always coming back for me to body image, just feeling as if my body wasn't enough. And I had this kind of aha moment, which we might talk about today, after my honeymoon, where I just kind of woke up one day and was like, gosh, there has got to be a better way to live my life. Like, there has to be more to life than just constantly being on different diets or being obsessive about my health and wellness journey. So that led me to discover intuitive eating. It took a couple of years to really solidify that experience for myself. And you know, what is so beautiful is I am a registered dietitian. So I'm like so grateful I became a dietitian, because, you know, originally the reason I became a dietitian was because I wanted to find the diet that would fix my problems, which again, to me, that was my body so sadly. But what's so cool is, even though the reasons I became a registered dietitian is different than what I do now, it still allowed me to work one-on-one with people and help other people. So once I understood intuitive eating for myself, I started a practice. And again, like I mentioned, now we are a virtual practice. I have dietitians that work for me, and we're also an online education center. And our drive and mission is just to teach people this, because it's changed my life so dramatically. Yeah. And I hope to have that happen for all people.
And thank you for sharing that with us. You know, just the fact that you decided to use your experience and, you know, the things that threw you into a disarray, and you designed something so wonderful to help other people so they didn't have to go through all of those struggles. So a huge shout out to you, and thank you. I'm pretty sure all our listeners are already thanking you for everything you just said, because this has been, as I shared with you earlier, one of the most requested episodes. So thanks again. And in fact, Victoria, when I was on your website, under the More About Victoria section, you talked about some very real experiences, you know, and personally, when I was reading it, my mind kept saying, that is so me. So I related to every word, you know, aside from obsessing over your photograph and how much I thought you looked like Meghan Trainor. No, literally you do. So talk to me a little bit more about what life was like before you reached your present mindset about wellness.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because like you said, I think so many people can relate to this. And also, maybe someone listening doesn't realize that they have a wellness problem, because what's going on right now in our health and wellness culture is it's very diet-centric. It's very focused on eat this, don't eat that, follow this specific plan, don't eat these inflammatory foods. And it's just really all-encompassing. And that's what my life was like before. Like I mentioned in when you were asking me about my own journey, sometimes I was constantly dieting, and sometimes I was just obsessed with clean eating, because I felt like if I could become this perfect person, this perfect dietitian with a perfect body, my life's problems would be fixed. And it made me have not only this constant feeling of not enoughness, because you can never, you know, you can never obtain perfectionism. It's impossible to obtain. But it also kept me on this hamster wheel of always feeling as if I was never enough. And I was so preoccupied. I think the main thing for me, when I look back about my wellness obsession and also my diet, clean eating obsessions that I had, was I was always thinking about it. It took up probably 95% of my brain space. And really all that I did, I spent so much time writing down what I was going to eat, how I was going to eat, you know, executing that, researching, obsessing. It just wasn't worth it. Like, when I look back on my life when I'm 80, I do not want to look back and say,
I know,
Victoria, there she lays. She like spent all of her life obsessing over how she ate and what she looked like, you know? So I think for me, that was like a huge realization of like, I can't keep doing this, because this isn't life-giving, and nor is it value-based for me to spend all my time doing this.
Right. No, I totally hear you. I mean, I remember I was so obsessed with MyFitnessPal that once my mother, she was sitting next to me, and she noticed that I was, whatever, you know, entering my meals for the day. And you know how these apps, they also offer like a little chart representation that tells you how many carbohydrates. My mom, she flipped. She said, when did consuming food become such a, you know, like, when did it become like a thing where you create pie charts? Like, do you do this before every meal? And she did try talking sense into me at the time, but I think the concept was also very new to her. She has never used any kind of apps. And also, by the way, my parents are from India, so you can imagine. It's also like, no, like nutrition and eating food, and also like ghee, which I think it's called clarified butter here. That's a huge part of our culture. And I remember being very, oh my God, I'm not going to eat this. It has like 500 calories.
See, that breaks my heart, because like we should be eating the foods that are like culturally important to us and bring us so much joy because of that. Like, yeah. I hate the foods that we all miss out on when we are dieting, because I think that is what food should be about. It should be about food culture and connection and celebration. And we've really lost that.
True.
We really have.
True. So now my parents don't ask me. They're like, we've made really good dessert, but you obviously wouldn't eat it. So no, I do agree. It's sad. But Victoria, did you have like an aha moment before you took on this, journey to heal? Or was it like something that happened overnight? Was it something that happened over a long period of time?
I feel like the answer to this is both. Mm. So I definitely had an aha moment, which I don't know that everyone necessarily has. I do think True. Some people hit breaking points. I know I personally did. So I mentioned it earlier, but for me personally, the year before my wedding was a time of really heavy restriction. And maybe as a look back now, kind of that last aha, or sort of that last hoorah with dieting. Mm-hmm. Because after I came back from my honeymoon, I just woke up one day and was like, I can't keep doing this, because what had happened was I restricted so heavily the entire year leading up to my wedding that I ended up binge eating the night of my wedding, the entire honeymoon. It's so sad to me because that's the memories I have now. But again, I'm grateful it happened because it's led to me to where I am today. But that was my aha moment, was waking up and being like, gosh, like this is so sad that that's how I spent my wedding and my honeymoon. Like it's because I was so restrictive, I have to figure out this intuitive eating thing. Because I think for me, I had briefly read or learned about intuitive eating, but wasn't really ready for the information. Mm-hmm. And that's what helped me be ready, was hitting that breaking point. But as far as actually becoming an intuitive eater, it was definitely a year or two journey. I do feel as if it was a longer journey for me than it is for a lot of my clients, my online course students, because this kind of stuff, you know, working with people didn't really exist when I was going through this 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Sure.
That was just really something that's picked up more here recently. So I do feel like it could have been a lot easier, quicker, less confusing of a process, but if I would have had proper support and guidance. But it definitely still was a mindset shift, and it took a couple years to really solidify how I practiced it and how I showed up as an intuitive eater and practicing that philosophy that is now everything that my business is, which is wellness without obsession.
Mm-hmm. The point you made about dieting a year prior to when you were supposed to get married, right? I think that is so real, like, especially for women. I remember, I mean, I was so nervous around the time of my wedding that, believe it or not, but I think I lost, I'm not even joking, 6 pounds or so in a week. In a week. And I know this because I weighed myself. It's just like now that I'm thinking about it aloud, I feel like, how could I even do that myself? And I'm pretty sure like there are so many other people who do that, right?
Well, it's also like it's highly praised in our world, right? I think any of us that are in a like modern getting married life, I mean, it is so, I got so much praise and so much compliments from other people for losing weight. Had they known that it was disordered eating that was leading to that, I would have hoped maybe they wouldn't have said anything. True. But I still feel like it's so highly praised that I don't know, maybe people still would have. But yeah, I wonder if this is true for you, Sabrine, but it only further propelled my disordered behaviors because people were telling me how beautiful I looked.
Yep, absolutely. No, I agree with you. And I think the word skinny, right, is often used as a compliment. And I honestly have started feeling like telling someone they look skinny when you meet them first and assuming that it's a compliment and that they'll take it that way, I think is, you know, you have to think twice about that. I don't think the word skinny has any positive connotations in my world, at least, because I think that is the word that gave me instant gratification after I went on a crash diet and lost weight and got the compliments, that I think now it's a trigger word for me. If someone says you look really skinny, I'm like, is that a good thing or is that like a bad thing? Am I, did I fall off the wagon again, right? And I mean, honestly, the diet culture that has engulfed us, right? It doesn't really help. A culture that worships thinness and equates it to health and moral virtue, which means you can spend your whole life thinking you're irreparably broken, but because you don't look like the impossible thin ideal, right? And on your website, again, I'm going to give you a lot of references from your website because it's so fantastic. You talked about exactly that and how you were made to feel like your body was not doing what it was supposed to and that it was broken in some ways. Where do you think this sort of narrative is coming from and what fuels it?
Oh gosh, I mean, I think it's the big picture of where it comes from is diet culture. Mm-hmm. And diet culture, if someone isn't familiar with that terminology, is the system. It's not like one specific thing. It's a system of beliefs and, corporations and businesses that profit off of us feeling this way. And I think more particularly in my own personal experience, it was the health and wellness infused diet culture that really fueled my own personal experience, because especially towards the end, it wasn't necessarily always, my fitness power calorie counting, which is something I definitely did a lot of, but towards mm-hmm. the end, it was gluten-free and being keto or being paleo or intermittent fasting. And I think that it's unfortunate that the health and wellness, why I'm bringing that specific part up, is yes, they're telling you to, intermittent fast or eat gluten-free because certain things are inflammatory or because, cleaning can help detox your body. But if you really keep asking why enough times, it's still saying that the thin ideal is what health looks like. So while mm-hmm. they're not specifically saying lose this amount of pounds, it's still telling you that thinness is what is healthy mm-hmm. and that's why you should be doing these detoxes or these cleanses or these diet plans. And I think it's so unfortunate because we've really lost the fact that there's such diversity and there's such a need for diversity, including mm-hmm. with body sizes. And I think particularly the health and wellness world to me is what's really complicated this thin ideal, because again, it's not that they're telling us that we need to look like, there's still this idea that we need to look like maybe the models and the celebrities, but now it's like, you need to look like this health influencer, or you need to look like this dietitian or doctor that you follow. And I think that's where things have gotten even more complicated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And in my part of the world, people are actually like obsessed with thinness, and thinness is equated with being good looking. Right. And of course, my culture is also obsessed with light skin, being lean, having light eyes is a bonus. OK, like that's not me. That's them. And a woman who doesn't have her own opinion. And that last one is a whole other thing. OK, so growing up, I was told that I had to lose weight or nobody would marry me. And I know that that's ridiculous. So most people who've known me for a really long time have seen me in all sorts of shapes and sizes. And I know so many other people like myself who lose and gain and lose and gain. It's exhausting and also confusing as to why after shedding all the weight would you fall off the wagon. It's a very frustrating mm-hmm. yo-yo pattern, and then you get really complacent after you lose the weight and you start eating all sorts of things and processed food, and then boom. So basically it's a maze and you don't really know how to get out of it. So guide us through this maze, Victoria. What is the first step?
I love the way you described it so much, Sabrina. That was like perfectly articulated. Yay. I think all of us listening can like nod our heads and be like, yep, that's exactly how it feels. Mm-hmm. To me, the first step is acknowledgement and awareness that it's happening. Like, how do you get out of it if you don't recognize that your dieting attempts, your weight loss and weight gain, or your obsession with clean eating, that if you don't recognize that it's become disordered eating, you can't get out of it. So to me, that's that first step, is acknowledgement and awareness. And maybe even to starting to, as you bring the acknowledgement that these are dieting and disordered behaviors, you also start to learn a little bit more about what intuitive eating is and get some proper education on it. Because I do think there's so much fluff information out there, particularly on social media, and it can be really confusing. I think that's why a lot of people just kind of give up on it, because they don't have a thorough understanding of what it is. But yeah, I would say the first step is just like bringing acknowledgement that something is going on that is that is worthy of being fixed, and you deserve and are worthy of that process.
Mm-hmm. And what about accountability? Like, after you've taken that first step, right, and when you're kickstarting the process, like I said, it's easy to fall off the wagon when you're like at gatherings and dinners and other outings. How do you stay on track?
Well, you know, I think that's such an interesting question. And I think even the idea of being off the wagon or staying on track to me mm-hmm. are examples of like wording that's a little like, what does that mean? Because intuitive eating is all about letting go of the black and white thinking of what health and wellness looks like. And the truth is that everything is allowed. Like, there's no on and off the wagon or staying on and off track, because these are just experiences and learning opportunities. So even as an intuitive eater, you're not necessarily trying to follow a specific plan. It's more about like flowing with that season of life and eating at the moment in the present. So there's no on and off track, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And as far as accountability goes, I mean, I think that's twofold. I think it's holding yourself accountable to letting go of the dieting, because it feels so safe to diet, to be honest with you. It feels like a sense of control. Like, you know what mm-hmm. you're supposed to do. You know what you're not supposed to eat. It is so messy, particularly in the beginning, to do otherwise.
Right.
And then I think the other form of accountability is finding some type of support, whether that's a family member or friend you can talk to, joining some of our free Facebook groups. I have one, but I know I'm not the only one that does. Following intuitive eating accounts. I think it's even, you know, doing something like online courses or working with someone if you need that level of expertise. Mm-hmm. Guidance.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about, you know, how it's not like a black and white situation, I am someone who recently took cognizance of the fact that, Sabreen, this is not you eating healthy. This is you controlling your consumption a little bit too much. And I think it's time to accept that you have a disorder. You do. And okay. I think I've only recently done that. And I know that I've had it for years, years and years and years, almost like half a decade or even more. And I'm sure you get this a lot. But when you talk about intuitive eating, right, if I were to eat that way, wait for it, I think I'd be running on 3 pizzas a day. So what is the real difference between eating when your body signals you to eat versus eating something because you're craving it? You know, in my case, I'm always craving naughty snacks. So it's hard to imagine how this approach would work for people like me.
And you are so not alone in thinking and feeling that way. I also, before I answer this question, just really want to commend you for your bravery, because it can be really hard to admit that you have a problem, particularly disordered eating. Mm-hmm. Most people think that there's either just like normal eating or eating disorders, and they see right. eating disorders as this very specific narrow type of person. But the truth is there's like this entire spectrum, and it can be even almost more harder to admit when you aren't necessarily at that level, but you still need help and you still aren't in a healthy relationship with food. So mm-hmm. major kudos to you.
Thank you.
I think this is so common. And whenever people say, I couldn't eat intuitively, I would just eat nonstop all the time without regards to what's best for my body, I'm usually like, yep, I get it. I know that you feel that way. And I vividly remember feeling that way too. But the fact that you feel that if you were to let go of the rules, restrictions, that you would just never stop eating pizza, that to me, an indication that you're still having internalized diet mentality and that you're still mm-hmm. maybe in some way restricting, because that's not how the body works. The body doesn't want the same foods all the time. Your body has so much wisdom and understanding. We just don't trust our bodies. Like, we don't trust that we can eat all foods fit. And when I mean that, I mean eating pizza, but also eating a kale salad, eating ice cream, but mm-hmm. also eating sweet potatoes. So I think for me, it just always comes back to, you have to trust this process, and you have to let go of the internalized diet mentality that's telling you that if you let yourself do this, no, you're just going to never stop eating pizza. So I think that's mm-hmm. part of that process is identifying when that's occurring.
Mm-hmm. So, serious question for you. I know that you have very deep expertise in this area, right? Listening to your body. Do you have days when you cross all the naughty eating red lines? And I know that I'm still coming from a diet mentality.
I love that you recognize that.
Because I was like, as I say this, Victoria, please know that I know.
I appreciate that because these are the questions that people have. So it's like super real in that way. So thank you for that.
Of course. But do you ever do you go bonkers eating caramel bites and Kit Kat? And if yes, how do you then, again, another one from someone who still has that mentality, how do you recover from that without punishing yourself? And I'm not saying that that's the case with you, but women especially, we have hormones, right? Not that men don't, they do too. It's a different case, which I can't really speak on their behalf right now. But, we have these phases or periods where we want things, right? And so do you ever have those days when you feel like, screw it, today I'm going to eat the 11 Kit Kats I have in my bedside drawer?
Okay, I'm going to answer this and I'm going to blow your mind a little bit, but then I'm going to caveat this.
I'm ready.
No, I don't ever have days like that. But my caveat is, and let me back up and explain. Absolutely, in the beginning of learning to become an intuitive eater, I call it the permission stage, without a doubt, absolutely. But that was happening because I was making things off limits. And in order to become this place where I'm normalized and I eat all foods, I had to start eating those foods again. And particularly in the beginning, I would go crazy eating all the things, as you described it, go bonkers, eating all the caramel bites and Kit Kat. Absolutely, I did that a lot. But it was because I had emotionally and physically restricted all those foods for such a long time. I needed that period of time so I could make peace with those foods. Now, in the stage I'm at now, given I have practiced this for years at this point, so I really want to be compassionate if people feel like it feels so incredibly far-fetched. Mm-hmm. I don't, but the reason is not because they're naughty or I shouldn't do that. I don't, because they're always available to me. That's what's so interesting with the intuitive eating approach, is because all foods are emotionally equivalent. I have what's called, we describe it as the habituation response, which means you become normalized to eating foods and they don't have this emotional weight or hold over you. So the days I want a Kit Kat, I eat a Kit Kat. For me, it's always chocolate chip cookies. I make them from scratch. I love doing that. Ice cream, brownies, my favorite foods that I think a lot of people would see as quote unquote naughty or indulgent are regularly part of my diet. So I find I can eat them mindfully and enjoy them in a way where I don't have to save up and then only go crazy eating them all maybe within one day. So I think it's a little bit of both. You have to let yourself go through that phase and what I again call the permission stage. And also over time, because, to me, a Kit Kat is the same as a kale salad. I don't really worry about it. When I want it, I want it. And when I don't, I just move on. And as a result, I do eat a lot of what people would think of as nourishing foods for sure. But I also eat all foods, meaning I do eat those cookies and those brownies. And it's not something where I guess the difference now, I would say, is I'm not eating a dozen cookies like I once used to. I definitely used to restrict and then binge eat. But in order to stop what would be the binge eating, you have to stop the restriction. Does that answer your question and questions about that? I know that's super confusing and maybe sounds a little what? How? How?
I think it's super interesting because I assumed all these years that I know all about it, right? But I guess the whole point you brought up about trusting your body and the wisdom that your body comes with, I think that's really important. And I think I don't know about our listeners, but I haven't given it an honest shot, right? I haven't. So when you say intuitive eating, I look at it as a word in the dictionary and what it means. So I take it at face value, but I haven't necessarily applied it to my daily life.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just keep giving it time and really dive into it. I find a lot of times people will dip their toes into the sand and then maybe have a day like how you're describing it, where they're eating all the quote unquote naughty eating headline foods and then they get scared off by it. So my thing is always coming back to trusting your body.
Yeah. And I think I just have to start. I feel like you just have to let go off for a second and just let it sink in. I think it's that specific stage and part where you're like, should I do it now or should I delay it for another 10 days? And after 10 days, I am going to try. And the 10 days become a year. And literally, I was thinking about it the other day. I was according to me and my old, you know, self, I was at a very good place, right? I was quote-unquote skinny, right? And I looked good according to what I thought looking good meant, like the image that made me smile when I saw myself in the mirror. And I, you know, my weight started creeping in. The thing is, it's complacency. You become really complacent. You see a few photographs of yourself and you're like, oh, is that how I look? Oh, I can eat like anything I want. And I guess you get trapped in that whirlpool and then there's no turning back. And then 6 months into the whole drill, you're back to square one and you're miserable and you stop going out and wearing your favorite clothes and you stop taking photographs of yourself. And I think it's just like this whole downward spiral, right? And I think, like, honestly, Victoria, just as someone who consumes a lot of content on social media, I've come to realize that people have a very surface level, you know, expression of what body positivity really means. And social media makes it worse with all the dieting fads. So, you know, there are these sugar bear honey supplements or whatever they're called. And I mean, I loathe whatever that is. It's just annoying. Every time I see it, I feel like it's fake. It's like a fake scammy commercial. But it's true because like so many celebrities endorse it, right? And these things, they basically push you further away from body acceptance. So how do you separate that from the reality and keep the focus on yourself and what makes you feel great instead of trying to fit into this cookie cutter body image that is promoted by Instagram or Snapchat or whatever?
Yeah, such a good question, because I do agree wholeheartedly. I think there's such a surface level expression of body positivity, and I think it's even not respecting the origins of the movement and what it was truly created for. So, you know, I think there's a lot of ways to get to a place where you can focus on better body image, but Instagram isn't that place, right? I mm-hmm. do think Instagram is wonderful for following a diverse group of types of bodies and races and ethnicities and genders and just getting good diversity of what bodies look like, mm-hmm. right? So I think I like that part of it. And there's so many wonderful accounts to follow. But it can also very quickly make you question yourself or question your eating, your exercise habits. So the first thing I would say is like create some boundaries with how long you spend on it, your morning and evening routines, not being on it, who you follow, who you're unfollowing. So from an Instagram perspective, that's my personal recommendations there. Mm-hmm. But I think cultivating better body image is getting off stuff like that and really having conversations with yourself. A lot of what we share about in the work that we do is focus a lot on the self-talk that we have, or you can describe it as like inner dialogue. And I think mm-hmm. what a lot of people don't recognize is that their poor body image stems from a lot of negative self-talk and negative self-beliefs that they have about themselves. So I think that's part of it, is acknowledging the conversations you're having and reframing thoughts. I always describe it, don't focus on being like positive or saying all these things you love about your body, because that's going to feel so hard for someone who genuinely hates their body. What I say is focus on something like you could be grateful for. So mm-hmm. instead of saying like, God, I hate my thighs because they touch and they don't look like this influencer that's all, you could say, I'm grateful that my legs allow me to walk today. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful I could work today. I'm grateful I could move my body in a joyful way today. So I think gratitude can be really helpful. And for me personally, whenever I counsel on body image, I try to focus more on body respect, because again, that feels a lot more easier. Mm-hmm. And the truth is you don't have to respect your body to love and accept, or so you don't have to love your body to respect mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. right? You can still practice body respect without having this idea of like you have to love your cellulite or you have to love your stomach roll. So right. I think that's a lot more easier to come to terms with than this mm-hmm. idea of being like super positive and loving about your body.
Right. And, you know, strangely, even though I've had, you know, I've grappled with eating disorders, I've always been very unbothered about stretch marks and, you know, things that people, for example, cellulite, you know, I think it's not as much what I see when I'm alone or when I'm going to take a shower, but it's more about like when I put my clothes on and when I walk out, how do people, what do people think about me? I think it's always been that. And I know for some people it's both. And you know, like I've always wondered about the ease with which a lot of wellness professionals, they advise that you, well, I think what you brought up is very different from what I'm going to say. Like what I've heard other people say is embrace your curves and your flaws and your cellulite. You talked about being grateful. And I think that's a very unique perspective, right? And the extent to which this ideal body type has been ingrained in our minds makes it so hard to do that, makes it so hard to accept your body the way it is. Like when I see my body rolls, it makes me instantly sad sometimes, right? Like if I've been binge eating and I notice a difference in my body, it makes me really sad and it depresses me. I almost, like, honestly, this is going to sound so ridiculous. I pull up like an Excel sheet in my brain to calculate how much or how long it would take for me to get rid of those body rolls. So how can people change the way they think about their bodies? And I do realize this is a very broad question, but what is a good starting point for people who are unhappy with the way their body looks?
Yeah, so nuanced and so deep, like you mentioned. It's such a broad question. I'm trying to think of like the best place to start. I mean, I'm going to honestly answer kind of the way it answered earlier, which is like acknowledging that you hate your body, because we have these thoughts that then become how we treat ourselves. And I think most people just simply don't recognize that they have a negative self-thought about themselves. I think mm-hmm. that's a great place to start. I think getting curious and asking, why do you feel that way? Like, why do you feel, they see a body roll that it makes you sad? And like starting that conversation, well, that's because I learned that body rolls are bad. And that's because diet culture has told me this. And like starting to have that dialogue can be really supportive and helpful. I just always say, like, don't like question everything you've been taught, because it is not your true values or your true beliefs. It's what we've been ingrained to believe. Mm-hmm. I think from there, in my personal beliefs, I think body image starts with just treating your body well. And for me, that's, it always comes back to intuitive eating. Like, mm-hmm. I just think that's such a supportive way, because body image is so deep and so nuanced. And I find for so many people, it is so, like it's a peeling an onion. Like it takes so many layers to peel
true,
back.
True.
You know, I could say all these surface level things, like just, you know, state some mantras and say how much you love your body today. But the truth is, it's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah.
So for me,
agreed.
Kind of earlier, like I said, I think it comes back to like, okay, well, since you don't love your body, we can talk about that over time, but how can you respect your body? Can you make sure you eat 3 meals today? Can you eat a snack when you need one? Can you drink some water today?
Yeah.
Could you go for a walk? Could mm-hmm. you meditate today, even if it's just for like literally 2 minutes? Like, mm-hmm. what are some things we could do to respect our body so we can start to see it in a different light that isn't about maybe embracing your curves? Which, by the way, I love that idea. I think I've just, and for myself, I genuinely do feel that way some days, not all days though. And I always like to, you know, be careful not to make it sound like it's an all the time thing, because it is not. But I often can feel that way. And I can often also not like my body too, but I never stop respecting and treating my body well, mm-hmm. no matter what, how I personally feel about it that particular day. And I think that's the difference. I don't mm-hmm. start calculating how to get rid of it if I see it that day and feel genuinely upset about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll also share too, I think poor body image days, like the days in particular, we all have the days where we wake up and just like, ugh, I hate this,
I
hate
know.
That.
Yes.
You know, oh my gosh, yes, right? So yep. usually those days come from a day where something super stressful is going on in your life. There's something that feels out of control. And I think it's even just, you know, understanding that it could even not be about your body. It could be about something else. And it's like a way to project the control and maybe even the anger and frustration that you feel onto something that feels a little bit more controllable, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, because we can't really control our bodies. We only can change so much about them, but we feel as if we can. So
right.
that's, I think, why we go towards that.
Right. Speaking of control and going back to, you know, eating intuitively a little bit here, it can be often confused, at least in, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you know, eating intuitively can be confused with eating whatever you want is probably a part of it, right? But also in like whatever quantity at whatever time. And now as I say it, I do realize that that's probably true. So it's not a mistake. I'm already getting educated a lot as I speak with you.
Well, it is true, but it's also, it's I know. Than that.
I exactly.
That's the way I always describe it. It's like, it is true you have unconditional permission to eat, but it's also more than just that.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad that you basically know what I'm talking about. So oftentimes it's not your body, but your brain also. Right? Like, especially for, I think it's really true for me, telling you that you need to eat. So even when you're not hungry, you eat, right? And in fact, interestingly, in the Japanese culture, they often talk about this concept called, wait, let me pronounce it correctly. It's kodokunakuchi, and that means lonely mouth. And it's basically a nicer expression to state that you eat because you're bored sometimes. And I am bored a lot, Victoria. So that's not helpful. How does one, I know you talked about drawing boundaries, right? How do you draw those boundaries? Like, if I am bored and if there's a jar of like chocolate covered cashews, which there literally is in my one arm distance reach, what do you do? How do you do it? Like, tell me, educate me.
Okay, so some ideas you could do are just ask yourself, like, are you truly hungry? Mm-hmm. What level of hunger are you? Does that sound appetizing to eat? If you generally want something to eat, but you don't always have to be hungry. This isn't a hunger fullness diet. There's always, you know, exceptions. Nothing's extreme with intuitive eating. But mm-hmm. if you are genuinely hungry, is that what you want? Would something else sound appetizing? Or, and the question I always like to say is, what do you need in this moment to take care of yourself? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, if you have unconditional permission to eat the chocolate covered cashews, would that be the best way to take care of yourself? Or mm-hmm. would it be going for a walk, taking a bath, mm-hmm. Reading a book, doing some work? Would it be having a conversation that you've been putting off? Is it maybe going to the grocery store? I mean, I think there's the idea True. Here is not to villainize mm-hmm. eating out of emotions, which is what boredom eating is. It's instead saying, okay, well, I could do that. And also I have the opportunity to do anything that would help me in this moment that I need. What would be best in this moment for me? Mm-hmm. So I think it's more about, less about saying, how do I stop this? And more about opening up the other opportunities for different ways to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. But again, I think for me, asking why, asking questions, and then again, how I said, stop, pause, and ask yourself, what do you need in this moment to take care of yourself? It right. could be the chocolate covered cashews, and that's fine. But is there something else that would feel good right now too?
Yeah. And on a side note, if anyone here shops from BJ's, they sell everything supersized, okay? So be careful. I mean, it's the size of my face, so that doesn't help. But I remember I was reaching out to get something the other day, and I was wearing my Garmin watch, and I suddenly realized that I hadn't met my daily step count, and I immediately retracted, which I'm not saying is a healthy behavior either, right? In this Asian time, we're tracking our steps, our heart rate, our caloric intake, calories burned. Do you think that, does it help the situation or does it make it worse?
Oh my goodness. That's like, no one's going to like my answer here, but I think it makes it worse. If I'm being mm-hmm. honest with you, I don't track anything. I don't track my steps, wow. my heart rate, my caloric intake. Calories burned. I mean, it takes me away from my innate wisdom of my body and my mind-body knowledge. So mm-hmm. it doesn't matter to me what the number says. What matters is what my body is telling me it needs. So mm-hmm. I will say sometimes there's a time and place for it. I know some people are very goal-oriented around, let's say, sometimes we'll have clients that are really into running and they want to meet a certain amount of miles, or they want to strict train and be able to lift a certain amount of weight. And sometimes mm-hmm. tracking in those circumstances can be really supportive. Maybe another exception example would be for calories. There are times when we are tracking our clients' calories to ensure that they're eating enough. But I think for the average mm-hmm. person just trying to live a normal life, not in those exceptions circumstances, mm-hmm. I just don't think it's helping you. I think it's actually making us more
agreed, yeah,
all or nothing in our behaviors. And I think it's making us be like, okay, well, if I didn't get all my steps in today, then I can't do this and I should do this. And it's like all this shoulding on yourself instead of just like going with what you need in that moment, which can feel really hard if that feels like so unknown to you. But yeah, in my opinion, it just makes everything worse.
And taking this discussion to a slightly different direction now, but still related, I know that you have a daughter, and I've been meaning to ask you this. Did pregnancy change your image of your body?
Oh my goodness, what a good question, Sabrina.
This is a heavy one. This is a
yes. Yes, in a couple of different ways. It made me so insanely grateful of my body. It made me so in awe of what it could do. I mean, it literally created a human being. Like, when you stop and think about that, like, the woman's body is like freaking incredible. And then I birthed it and recovered. Like, I'm in awe. And also, there were a lot of days where, particularly in the postpartum, it's so hard because your hormones and you feel, you just feel so unlike yourself for quite a long time. I think I definitely had a lot of negative body image days in the postpartum. And I guess for me, it wasn't necessarily that it was the way my body looked, because I trusted it would go where it needed to go.
Sure.
It was more that I felt disconnected. And as you can tell from talking with me, I'm very connected to my body. Mm-hmm. So that was what was challenging for me from a body image perspective, is I felt so disconnected for such a long time from my body. So yes, in different ways, but overall felt really grateful and in awe. Super thankful I was able to breastfeed too. And that was such a, you know, a beautiful example of, like, again, the awes and wonders of our bodies. But also, yeah, definitely brought up new body image challenges of connecting to my body, of understanding that my body isn't necessarily my own anymore, which is something I don't think people talk about enough, of like how hard that can be mentally. And I think those were some of the challenges I dealt with during pregnancy and also in the postpartum.
And how do you suggest women deal with, you know, the mom shaming, mom body shaming culture that's hounding us? You know, I mean, I'm not a mother, but I can't even imagine what it's like to be told that, oh, you don't look the same anymore, or that you don't look as lean anymore or great anymore. Even that, you know, I have friends who had kids a few years ago, and they were told that, oh my God, you've lost your body forever. It's so overwhelming and unfair, and I'm pretty sure no new mother wants to hear that. That's not something you should even say to a person, because that's not the most important thing, right, in that moment. So how can new moms deal with this culture where they're expected to snap back?
Oh gosh, yeah, you're like making me so, like, as I'm hearing you say that, like, it enrages me to hear that you had a friend be told that.
Yeah,
because like, it's just kind of crazy, y'all. Like, just think that that's what we should be focused on, not like recovering from giving birth, recovering from the postpartum, recovering, taking care of our new baby. Like, that's what we should be focused on. We should be taking care of ourselves and our new child that's in this world, not worried about our bodies. So, oh gosh, I have so much compassion if someone's experiencing that. I personally did not get a lot of that. I'm just going to assume here it's because I do this for a living and I'm very opinionated about it. So I think everyone knew never to say anything to me about that, because they'd probably get, a very wordy conversation about how that, you know, the patriarchy, and that they should never say anything like that to a woman. But anyways, I think the best thing you could do is set boundaries. You know, I think you can compassionately set boundaries and say something like, I appreciate that you're looking out for me. However, that's a really concerning statement for you to say, considering I just gave birth to a child. Or, I know that you care about me deeply, but when you say things like that, it's hurtful, and I'm trying my best to take care of myself. So I think just finding some way to acknowledge that that person is trying to, you know, maybe they think that they're helping in some way, but also give back some boundaries of, like, they're not allowed to say that to me anymore, or that's an inappropriate thing to say to a woman. And honestly, I think it's really important that we as women, we say things like that, as uncomfortable as it can be. Mm-hmm. If we don't start saying something, people are always going to say stuff like that to women. So it's going to take some of us being really uncomfortable and being like, hey, that's inappropriate. I swear I say that like so many times to my family members, like, that's inappropriate. You can't say that.
Right.
Nope. Can't say that.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think we just have to be willing to say that, and just to be like, that's an inappropriate thing to say to a woman. Like, that's the last thing after she's given birth that she needs to hear right now.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you. I think silence doesn't help. You have to be the change you want to see, and you have to call it out. If you hear something that's not right, you have to let people know, because sometimes other folks they're not very aware of what they're saying, right? And we have to initiate some kind of culture change. I know I talked about snap back a little bit, and, you know, considering that a lot of celebrities, again, they endorse all these products to snap back, to size minus three, right? It doesn't really help. And also, one thing that I've noticed with a lot of celebrities, and I tend to ask this question to anyone who works in the wellness area, and you'll see this question being repeated across some of my episodes, is that a lot of what these, just in terms of what they eat, the celebrities, what they promote, it's either too exquisite or it's expensive, which gives the impression that holistic well-being as a lifestyle, as a concept, it's very expensive and that not everyone can afford the resources required to kickstart their journeys. How true is that?
Yeah, I would concur completely. I think it feels as if wellness is this out of touch, out of reach thing that you should always strive for, but you will never actually achieve. And I think it's not only celebrities doing that. I think that's the influencer marketing part of this too, where that's really cultivated that, you know, that belief that it's unattainable. And it's so unfortunate because, I mean, wellness is already so hard to attain for so many people, given the world that we live in. It's just unfortunate that we're like making it even harder. And I hope people listening know that, like, that doesn't have to be the case. Like, wellness is speaking to yourself kindly. It's taking a shower when you want to. It's, you know, feeding yourself throughout the day. It's drinking water. It can be like such basic things, meditating, getting sleep, you know, focusing. I always think of it like this, like, your mental health is the most important thing to me. Physical health comes along with mental health. So if you can focus your emotional well-being, if that's going to a therapist, if that's, you know, meditating, or if that's, you know, just, you know, drinking a glass of wine and watching some Netflix, like whatever you need to do to take care of your mental health, physical health will come along with that. And I think when we feel well mentally, which I understand is challenging, you know, that's not always easier said than done for all people, especially when we have mental health challenges. But at the same time, I think if we can prioritize that more in this health and wellness world we have right now, physical health will come along with that.
Absolutely. And here's another one before we get to the last question, Victoria, which is I skimmed through your social media and came across a post that was centered around this very interesting idea that your clothes are supposed to fit you and not the other way around, right? It's natural to feel awful when your clothes start to burst at the seams, especially if you really like something in your closet, right? Tell us about this approach of yours and why it's important to buy clothes that fit you instead of buying smaller sizes in hopes that you will one day lose the weight and fit into them.
Oh my goodness. I'm so glad you came across that post.
Yeah,
I love that idea.
I stalked you heavy.
I love it. I love it. And it seems so maybe cavalier, so, I don't know, so easy, but I think it's simple and so profound in how much it affects this. And I have no idea how I know I've seen posts from other people about it. That was probably the inspiration, but in my own experience, I started to have these conversations with my clients, realizing how important it was that their clothes fit is, because I'm like a fashion lover. I love design and clothing. I've always loved it, but for such a long period of my life, particularly when I was in that disordered behavior mindset and also getting out of it and my body was changing, I didn't let myself enjoy clothing. And it was like such a huge part of myself that I just like cut off because I didn't want to buy clothes that were a larger size. And that's so sad that I think so many of us can relate to that, but it's so important. I think clothing and fashion is an extension of our expression of ourselves and our personalities. So no matter what the size is, like if you can get something that fits you, your body image is going to massively improve simply because you're wearing something that you feel comfortable in. It's not, you know, squeezing you. It's not making you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I also genuinely think it can help with body confidence and just helping you feel more like yourself. And again, it doesn't have to be that, you know, you wait to figure out what size you're going to be. Like getting things that fit your now body, no matter if it's going to change sizes for, you know, smaller or bigger, I think it's just so important to have things that fit you right here, right now, that make you feel confident and that are comfortable to wear.
Thank you for saying that, because I am a victim of that mentality, which is no, don't like buy anything that's large, because then you're going to get really comfortable and then you're never going to go back to, you know, medium or a small.
And it's still just not accepting your size, right? It's still going back to the diet mentality.
Absolutely. And then also trying to fit into clothes that don't fit you as well, it makes you feel bigger in many ways. And I'm not saying that being bigger, I'm not saying that being bigger is a bad thing. I'm naturally a broad-boned girl, right? So no matter how much weight I lose or not, like, I'm always going to have this bone structure. But it does. It makes you feel uncomfortable to the point where it creates this almost like dysmorphia. I don't know what the exact word for it is, which is it doesn't fit you well. You're forcing yourself to fit into this. It's bursting at the seams and it's not you. It's just that you're not wearing the right size that makes you feel much bigger. And I think that's a big problem with a lot of folks. All right, Victoria, we've actually reached the end of this episode. And before we wrap up, this section is called Spill the Sauce. I know it sounds very, I don't even know. I came up with this like 3 days ago. So it's not like oh my God, I've done this for 12 years. Which is literally what we do. We share knowledge. And it's essentially a knowledge sharing segment. So Victoria, what advice do you have for people who are grappling with body imaging issues and want to take active steps towards eating more intuitively and want to lead a life that is centered around holistic well-being?
Okay, let me think what I want to say. Such a good question. It's like, so like I could say it in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. Number one, believe that you are worthy and you matter enough to focus on improving your relationship with food and your body, because for so many of us, our poor relationship with food is centered around our poor relationship with our bodies. Mm-hmm. Number two, I would say get correct, thorough education and guidance on this kind of stuff. If you leave it up to social media, you're always going to be really confused with this idea of intuitive eating. I think it is just quote unquote eat intuitively, which is vastly so much more deeper and nuanced than that. And then for holistic well-being, my advice is going to be focus on your own personal emotional well-being and mental health first. Remember, physical health will come along with that, and do what you can to, you know, really think about how you can best take care of yourself. And again, it could be the chocolate covered cashews that we talked about, but it could be going for a walk or exercising or getting enough sleep. It can be so many different things. And I just want people to remember, it doesn't just have to be food and exercise alone. It can be so many ways that we take care of ourselves. Even our internal dialogue improving in a more positive way can be a way to practice holistic well-being.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you for sharing those. And any last words before we wrap up?
I think just I want to leave off saying thank you, Sabrine, so much for having me. This has been so much fun to be on your podcast. I so appreciate it. And the person listening, I just want you to know that you matter, and like your thoughts and experiences in your life and your body matters in this world. So I hope that you can listen to this episode knowing that it is worthwhile, if you resonate with this, to work on improving your relationship with your body and your food, because you can achieve vastly more in this world when you're not preoccupied and pre-fixated on those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Victoria. So highly indebted to you for taking the time to join me. And I hope that, you know, you continue to spread the love, body positivity, and most of all, the benefits of developing healthy eating habits. The world really needs it, especially because of the amount of information that the internet and Hollywood throws at us, right? So thank you again for that. I would also like to take a moment to give a huge shout out to all our listeners for tuning in. Thank you for taking the time to listen in. And as always, I will see you guys next week. Till then, chin up. Yeah.